everybody. It's Jake Senziano, host of Jake and Gino Podcast, with my co-host, the multifamily mentor, the coach, the chef, the father, six, the best-selling author, the G-Daddy, Gino Barber. Gino, how's it going?
Jake, I'm doing great today, and I've got a quote from this guest's book, and I want to read it because I think this is important. I think this is what this podcast is all about. It is not your responsibility to listen to us. It is our responsibility to make you hear us. That's Robert Hirschfeld's quote that Renee put in his book, and it's stuck with me ever since. And I think Renee is going to deliver a ton of value in this podcast, so it's his responsibility. I'm throwing it on him now to have people listen to us. So let it rip, Jake.
Hey, the beatings will continue until morale improves. Maybe not. I don't know. Maybe I'm off on that one. So quick intro. Today's guest is considered by many as one of the top authorities on leadership and influence. For the last 27 years, he has been researching and applying behavioral neuroscience to solve challenges in leadership and integrates a practical business approach that inspires his audiences to take action. So without further ado, Renee Rodriguez, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, guys. I appreciate it. Excited to be here.
It is our pleasure. We got our heads looking straight now. We're completely aligned.
See, aren't you happy now? It looks so much cleaner. Thing.
And you're smiling, so we're doing it right. So let's get to know each other a little better. Please share us a brief background on yourself and how you got into business.
Sure. I was a basketball player most of my young life up until I got cut my sophomore year in college. Didn't know what I was going to do, and because all I cared about was basketball. I hated school, but I was told two very important pieces of advice. One was my mother. She asked me a question of what's the one thing I have to do? What's the one thing everybody in this room has in common? And I was trying to figure it out, couldn't figure it out. And she, in short, told me that everybody has a brain. And if I could understand how the brain works, life would be just easier. And so I went to school for behavioral neuroscience. But after I got cut, I didn't know what to do with my time and energy. And you know, studying the brain was one thing, but I got a chance to ask a CEO, what's the one thing I needed to do to be in his shoes when he got older? Because I figured, you know, just follow what works. And he looked at me and he smiled and he said, you learn how to sell. If you learn how to sell, you'll always be employed. And so those two focuses in terms of, you know, understanding how the brain works and the neuroscience behind it and putting that into practice for 4 years selling cookware door to door was probably the two most influential moments early on in my life.
How many years?
4 years door to door.
It's longer than most door to door, I feel like. Okay, well, there you go.
Yeah, it was the greatest thing that ever happened. I mean, I realized I could get cut from a basketball team, but if I made a sale, no one would cut me. And that, you know, they said, you know, do 10 presentations and you'll sell three. I'm like, okay, so I just do 10 to get three and you get paid X amount for three. Well, how fast can I get through these 10? That was my logic at 18 years old. And, you know, and it was, you know, I've been rejected, you know, by either girls or coaches or teachers for my whole life that, you know, rejection was kind of like I was just used to it and it kind of came with the territory. But I also, the only thing I knew was hard work. And so I did that and then graduated and went to work for a change management consulting firm that used brain research to deal with hostile work environments and culture change. And so here I was a cookware salesman and understood the brain. And then went to work putting it into practice in the most hostile work environments you can imagine, union labor issues. And it was some pretty crazy places that we worked. And you had to learn how to capture attention quickly. You had to learn how to gain and build trust and rapport really fast. You had to learn how to listen and be there. And so for people that didn't want anything to do with you, you had to be able to communicate some sense of value and show that you cared. And to a group of people that were highly resistant and skeptical. Best training ever. And so here I had that skill set combined with, you know, being a salesperson to my core, to understanding human behavior and the science behind it, and then understanding behavior change and putting that into practice and working with hostility and resistance, which resistance at the end of the day in my 27, now almost 30 years, is really at the core of resisting a new idea. If you're in sales, you're presenting new ideas. If you're in business, you're constantly presenting new ideas. If you're trying to raise money, the new idea is part with your money or invest your money with me versus them. And why? And so it's at the core of, I think, the human existence. And it all culminated in the one word of influence. And that to me is the answer to life's purpose. It's the answer to making more money. It's the answer to having a more meaningful life. And I can go into that deeper, but I think that's a little short background.
In the book, Renee, you say influence is the how of leadership, getting people to trust you and act on ideas. And it's inspiration when actions align with values. And I'm going to hold up the book for everybody. Amplify Your Influence. Amazing book. After all the years of struggle going through and hitting, you know, door-to-door salesmen, working through these companies, I picked up the book. I'm like, this book is phenomenal. Let's dive into the Amplify method. Frame, message, and tie down, because I think this is appropriate for anybody trying to sell ideas, as well as if you're in the real estate space trying to raise capital.
Yeah, for sure. Well, the method is based on how we process information. And so if you're listening and you're selling an idea, you have to get zoom out a little bit about your work, right? Sometimes salespeople, we get so caught up in trying to close a deal that we forget what we're actually doing. In closing a deal is the afterthought. It's the formality of the communication of value that exceeds the cost of doing business with you, right? And so if I've been able to communicate and present an opportunity, whether it's a purchase of something, an investment in something, a time spent, or a risk, and that presentation shows a value that far exceeds the cost of engaging in that relationship, then the delta between the two, the difference, would be a cost of not acting. Which is the ultimate presentation. That if you can leave my presentation going, man, every moment I don't work with Renee, I'm losing money. That is the ultimate. And there's a process to that. And now that's the expression in a business sense, but money is one expression of value. What if every time we met, you said, every time I don't follow Renee's plan, I'm getting fatter. Or every time I don't follow Renee's plan, I'm less happy. Or my relationships go down the tube, or I'm a less effective leader. And so I've got to be able to communicate that. And so does everybody listening. Whatever it is that you're selling, presenting, doing, offering, showing in a way that people go, wow, I'm paying attention. Two, I see the value of it. And three, I'm ready to act. And
is
so,
that more influential, the negative, than the positive? Like the positive of gaining money, is that, you know, the positive less influential than the negative, which would be I'm getting fatter? I'm just curious because this is obviously
so it's a both and. And so if you look at, there's a study done on that Johns Hopkins University did from a book called Change or Die. And the Change or Die, they're saying, okay, let's use the, maybe people need more motivation, because if you look at back in the time when this book was written, IBM held a conference every year called the Global Innovators Outlook Conference. And in that conference, they would take on one topic every year. And this particular year was healthcare. And at the time, healthcare was a $2 trillion budget. And of that budget, 80% of it was consumed by five behavioral issues. Five. Yeah, I bet you can guess every one of them. Smoking, drinking, stress, not enough exercise, and poor diet. So nothing that was like, oh my God, I didn't know any of those. No, we knew every one of them. So it wasn't a lack of...
Yeah.
What's that?
That's a metabolic syndrome, essentially. Yeah.
Yeah, well, we knew all of those. So it wasn't a lack of know-how,
yeah,
right? It wasn't a lack of knowledge. But then they said, well, maybe, okay, since they know it already, maybe they need more motivation. So let's scare them. And so what they did, and this is CEO of Johns Hopkins University, went to people that just had angioplasty, right? This is where they crack over the chest cavity and they rotor-root your veins, basically, you know, to reverse heart disease, which, by the way, is 100% reversible with diet and exercise. And so they go, okay, let's do the surgery. And then on their recovery bed, when they're in the pain, they got their stitches still in, the train tracks on their chest, and we're going to go and scare the crap out of them. And we walk in, we say, look, John, if you don't change how you eat and you don't exercise more, you're going to die. That's the ultimate motivator. And what a leverage point, right? Well, they found out within 2 years, 90%, 9 out of 10, were back for a second surgery. Remember, completely reversible. And so why? Well, one thing is that our mortality is very, we have to be in denial sometimes of our mortality, because there's so many things we do that we could just die at, but if we spend the day functioning and worrying about it, we won't function. Mm-hmm. And so that anything that was too big, it was just, and it was so far removed.
This is why click it or ticket works. Cause it's small enough where we can actually, I got it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, and it's simple and it's tangible and it's financially painful, but now they did another study. And this is why I'm going to tell you the both and. Dr. Dean Ornish, in a combination of Mutual of Omaha and University of San Francisco, they knew that there was a values component, an emotional component, spiritual component, and all of these other components that were missing in that change or die concept. And so what they did is they took same patients, and afterwards they had the daughter show up with two grandchildren and said, Dad, wow, you scared us. And you know, no, you know, honey, I'm strong. No, Dad, like it was just, whew, man, that was a lot. We were scared. Well, you know, honey, I'm a strong man. I said, well, you remember when I got married, Dad? And he's like, yeah, it was one of the greatest days of my life. He's like, you know, Dad, I was so scared, but when I went over, I didn't know what I was doing, but I looked at you and you smiled and winked at me and I knew everything was okay. Wow, honey, you're going to make me cry. Well, Dad, I don't tell you that to make you cry. I tell you that because if you don't change how you eat and how you exercise, you're not going to see your two grandchildren. Now, that study produced 70% were not back within 3 years. And so if you look at, there's the fear of loss, yes. Fear of consequence, if it's far removed, it's too far, the proximity of that consequence too far. But when it's that tangible, the fear of loss of something valuable is the ultimate. And so if we can identify what is valuable to people, so I'm thinking your audience here, the investments that you guys are talking about, the only people that are regretting not acting are the ones that acted too late. They're going, man, if I would have started 10 years ago, 20, 30 years ago, the wealth I would have right now, but I waited. And so if you can paint the picture of that moment early on, like Jim Rohn used to say, the worst place to find yourself is 100 feet from Niagara Falls in a boat with no oar and no motor. It's called It's Over. But the sad part of that story isn't even that. The sad part is that nobody was around to paint the picture of the roar of the falls way upstream. Mm-hmm. And that's what I think the job of leadership is in change and sales. Oh.
So four of the folks out there that are attempting to raise money for their multifamily investments, they need to tie it to obviously the importance of now and what that relates to in the future. And then look at the person and say, your kids are going to need this money or you're going to be in trouble long term. This is about financial independence in the future.
So look at the language,
for your kids. All
right? Well, look at the language choice, right? This is what your children need. So that's the gain of something.
Yeah.
Maybe a different way, and we'll just riff a little bit, is if you don't do this now, you're going to have one of two conversations with your children. Either one to say, look at the decisions and the sacrifices we made so that you could have this now. Aren't you glad, son, daughter? Or you're going to have a conversation that I don't think either one of us want you to have, which is, son, I blew it. I didn't act. I told you things, but I never followed through. Dad, you could have had wealth. You could have had this, but I decided to blow it, spend it in other things. That's a painful thought.
Woof. Woof. Heavy, Gino. It's heavy.
I like that. I'm gonna run. Can I pause the show? I'm gonna go run to Scott right now and tell him exactly what you said. I bet he has to watch this and say. And you know what it is? This is not nefarious. People are saying, "Oh, you're using mental jujitsu and you're trying to manipulate the person." I think this is manipulating the person for the good because I think you're trying to show them that hey, you need an oar before you get to Niagara Falls, and you need to plan for your future now. Because if you don't take action now, you don't want to be this person 10 years from now. And yeah. I could have helped you to do that. So there's where I see the line of using this to be phenomenal because you're actually using to help somebody take action when they may find themselves stuck, confused, not knowing what the next step looks like, Renee.
Well, that's the difference between manipulation and influence, by the way. You just nailed it. And so manipulation is using persuasion techniques to an extreme at the expense of someone else and underhandedly. So those three pieces. It's an extreme, it's underhanded, nobody knows it's happening, and it's at the expense of somebody. But if you're influencing, you're on above board using every tool you have to get somebody to realize something really positive for their life, and everyone wins. I have no qualms of using every single thing, every influence persuasion tool that I have to get my kids to stay away from drugs and alcohol. I have no problem with that, and nor should anybody else. And leaders should that as well. And here's the thing. Anybody who says they don't try to influence people around them would lie to you about other things. It's part of the human condition.
Yeah,
it's how we survive.
Completely. Yeah. So to play devil's advocate here, this is what I was pondering when you were speaking just a minute ago. And we've seen this time and time again where there's been an inferior product, but there's been better leadership and more influential teams to be able to sell or move that product, where there's been a superior product that has suffered because the team was not as influential as they could have been or they weren't putting in the work. So if you are the consumer, what's a good due diligence practice or ways to find alignment to get through the mess and recognize good influence when it aligns with a good product? Because that's that's nirvana. Everyone's winning at that point.
You know, you just outlined one of my life's purposes is, and I really love that question because it's so true. I've seen so many good people that were never taught the lessons and the skills of leadership and influence. And I have seen some, you guys swear on this podcast?
Yes. Gino doesn't like it, but I F and A comment. It's my fault. Yes, we do.
And I have seen some shitheads learn all the skills and move people to the wrong place.
Yep.
And I just wrote down this for myself because I take these podcasts and I always try to internalize what I'm saying. And I always ask myself, am I even doing this myself? And I just wrote, get angry, Renee. And why did I write that down? I go, because you're absolutely right. There's so many inferior things out there that are scams and aspirational appeals, the 6-minute abs, 30 days to financial freedom, the quick hits, the shortcuts.
4-hour work week. Love that guy, but I'm sorry, that shit doesn't work. So
yeah, it's a great hook. And he's made some massive changes, made a ton of money. But we know you're not going to do this in 4 hours. And the world wouldn't function. And so it's okay. But you know what? I think I know what Tim Ferriss was trying to do with that. But you know, and that's where you have to sort of balance you know, some semantic what do you call it, mazes there a little bit. But it's okay for us to do that. So going back to your question, which I love, by the way, what do we do as a consumer? I think we have to learn more self-awareness of how we make decisions. We are emotional beings and society knows it. Politics knows it. The media knows it. Branding agencies knows it. Influencers know it, the good ones. When I say good, I say the ones that are getting a lot of attention. And if we don't realize how impulsive the world is trying to make us, I mean, look at what's going on. I remember when we watched TV and how much silence there was between ideas. Hey, everyone. Good to see you today. Like, oh, is that a new outfit you have on? And they're talking to you in that sense. You listen to kids' shows today. And they have eliminated dead space. Hey, what's going on? We're going over here. Anyways, bing, and all of this stuff is happening because they want to constantly secrete dopamine to capture attention. And there's no silence. And so then we go, okay, if that's what's going on. And right now we know, okay, there's a million things that we cannot control that cause massive stress but capture our attention. The media and politics are constantly putting in our face that which we cannot control, that shows how much lack we have or how much bad there is to create the emotional reaction that then can be manipulated into decisions, whether it be votes, purchases, attention, shares, likes, views. And so to the consumer, I think we have to, no one's going to do this for us. There's no cavalry that's going to show up and say, hey, we're here to save you. We have to be our own cavalry. We have to be smarter. We have to build our self-awareness. We have to do things to educate how this is happening to us so that we can navigate better. I'm not going to change the world and I'm not going to prepare the world for my son or my kids, but I can prepare my kids for the world and I have to prepare myself for this world. And one of that is just acknowledging how things are right now.
I was going to ask you to talk about the frame message tie down, but this question is going to really piggyback off what you're talking about. Jake, it's the flux capacitor. The reticulator activating system, okay, just because I know you don't like the word, the RAS. And it's one of the things that they use is story. And talk about story, how important story is, how it releases the dopamine, how it releases those happy chemicals, and how it's so underutilized. And I think that's one way. And if you're getting it used on you, maybe you can say as a consumer, hey, I like the story, but the product still sucks. So we can use it for both ways.
Well, story is, man, story is one of the most powerful superpowers there is. And the reason is, it's the function that it plays in the brain. Story is another way of saying narrative. And narrative is a beginning, middle, and an end. The brain structures memories. It structures the understanding of the world, basically constructs reality based on narrative, how things start, where they go, and where they end. And that's how even memories are constructed. And so we spend about 50%, depending on what study you look at, of our waking hours daydreaming. Mm-hmm. And daydreaming is just narrative playing. But typically daydreaming to the future, scenario planning, if this, then that. And we do that to prepare ourselves. We do that to prepare how do we function through the world, and we run scenarios so that we can better act and behave and purchase and speak or whatever it is. And sometimes we run narratives that are cause massive anxiety. Well, if I go on stage and I bomb, what's going to happen? Well, that's a future trip. You're tripping over the future. And so that function of story is happening almost 50% of the time. But now there's two times where we don't daydream. One is under life and death situations. Somebody's holding a gun to your head. You're not daydreaming. You're pretty present in what's happening. The second time is when someone tells you a story. Okay, so why? Well, they're daydreaming for you. Okay, that's pretty powerful. So what does that really mean though? Well, if we use narratives as constructs of reality, then when somebody tells us a story, we are in essence handing the keys over to somebody to create a narrative, construct my reality, and in part and install narratives of whatever they want. Now, they can install narratives of love, of hate, of opportunity, of fear. And so when we look at that piece of the narrative and what's going on, there's so much happening in that moment where if we're not careful around who we hand the keys over to or how we do that, that's where our behavior is guided. And now here's the biggest, craziest piece. Our brains don't know the difference between a narrative that you tell us and a narrative we live. And here's an example. And people, that's kind of a statement that kind of just doesn't really land until you think about this. Mm-hmm. Have you ever cried during a movie?
Well, right? Jake doesn't cry, but I do. Okay.
I cried during the full version of the Chevy commercial with the grandma. That's
got to be the full version. Yeah.
You got to see the full one. The short one's not there, but if everyone checks it out, the full version of the Chevy commercial that just came out with the grandma that's got dementia. That
hits hard.
That hits.
It hits hard. Yeah. So now here's the crazy part. You know, those are actors. It's not even real.
Not after 20 seconds.
Yeah, well,
and that proves your point.
Yeah, but it's there. When you look at this, like you cry in a movie, and we go, "Hey guys, those are actors," and then we kind of laugh at it. But why did we cry if we know someone is literally saying, "All right, action," and then pretend to win the game, pretend to lose the game, pretend to die? Yet our brains go, "This is really happening." Trigger all the somatosensory parts of our brain, trigger the amygdala, trigger all that stuff, and feel it as if it's real. And so we become the protagonist in the stories that we witness and listen to. And when we become that, that's also what creates rapport, creates trust. And if somebody shares their story, we are becoming them in that and seeing the world through their eyes, their narrative, their reality. And so when we talk about the power of story, it is the most influential, the most powerful way to connect. It's one of the only ways that we build empathy. If you can't understand someone's narrative, their story, there's no way to empathize because I don't understand the narrative they live. But empathy is about understanding the narrative that they function from. Mm-hmm. And so story is incredibly powerful.
Renee, my next question would be, if you're raising capital, something that's intensive with numbers, something that you lose people, and I see a lot of, you know, beginning investors, members starting out with, this is what the rate of return is. Shouldn't they be working on an origin story, for example, and breaking it down and making it more story-like to raise that capital? Can you give us, I guess, some tips on how to do that for sure. Anybody trying to raise capital?
So this is a big question we get all the time. So I want you to think of storytelling and influence tools as a club in your bag of golf, right? Your golf bag. What's the best club to use?
Depends on the situation.
Depends on the situation. Absolutely. Perfect answer. And so what a lot of people do, though, is they have one club, which is storytelling or framing or a framing device of some sort, and it's their driver, and they use a driver for everything. And so if you look at different scenarios, there's different framing devices. Story is just one framing device. But if you go to Shark Tank, there isn't a single Shark Tank episode that begins with story. And it would be wrong to. If you're at a budget meeting, you don't begin with story. You begin with the numbers. So numbers mm-hmm. first, story second, environment in that sense. That's mm-hmm. And so you don't grab your club first from the bag. You assess the hole, the tee, the angles, the wind, the hazards. And so in influence and business in life, you also, before you grab your influence tool, whether it be a story or a metaphor or a prop, a quote, a statistic, you have to assess the situation. So if I'm in a raising capital mode, the last thing I want to do to people who are in that mindset is to say, so I remember when I was a kid, they're like, dude, how much for how much? Give me mm-hmm. the playground. And so that becomes your frame. You know, hey, we're looking to raise $350,000 for 10% of our company. And can't wait to tell you about it. They go, okay, great. Now I know the playground. I know the parameters of what you're asking. And that becomes the frame of which I'm listening to everything you're saying. if I tell the story, I'm going to come back and go, how much are you asking for? And what do you think the company's worth? Mm-hmm. I'm going to have to fill in that blank. So we fill that up to create the boundaries. It's like, here are the out of bounds of a football game. Now we're going to play and I'm going to tell a story within that. And so for that scenario, I want people to always think it's not about story for everything. It's about assess the situation first and then do that. Now they're going to want the story second because they want to know what's happening.
It's why you start a puzzle with the border. Okay. You got to create the frame to start it. And then you can start to fill it in. But if you don't, it's going to be a mess.
Such a great analogy.
Yeah. I did a puzzle this weekend.
He's the smart one. So I
guess, in the second book.
Renee, before we go to the short answers, I really want to get into that frame message tie down. Cause I think that's really important. Like you said, starting the frame. And I think most people, myself included, really struggle with the tie down. And I think that's such an important component to it. Can you run us through that framework, the Amplify framework?
Yeah. So the Amplify formula is made up of three things. One is understanding that we understand the world through frames. And so if I were to tell you, and by the way, if I don't share my frame of reference or the frame by which I want you to understand this, your brain will create its own. Mm-hmm. I'll give you an example. We talked about this before. First word that comes to mind when I say used car salesman.
Sleazy,
right? And so, you know, sleazy, Ron, dishonest, all the negative things. And if you're listening to this, you probably have those thoughts. So what happened was I spoke without a frame and your brain immediately went in and filled it. And it pulled its your own frame of reference saying, okay, used car salesman, I have to construct this reality of who this person is. I'm going to go back to my frames of reference, my past experience, pull from that to create this person in the here and now. So I have to pull from my past to create the now. That's what experience is about. And if you don't have a lot of experience, you have no frame of reference. For example, when Uber first came out, we had no frame of reference. We're like, I click this button, tell people where I'm at, and some random person comes up. I get in their car, they drive me, and I leave, and I don't have to give them money. And are they safe? I mean, there was no frame of reference. And so that was just wild. And until there became a frame of reference, we didn't know that. So we were filling in with fear and all sorts of stuff. So, but if I were to tell you about my grandfather, who was lived in Cuba right before the Cuban Revolution was happening, and he knew this wasn't good for his family, so he wrote a letter to the president of the United States saying, if you get me and my family out of this country, I'll come in and fight for yours. So he made it to the right person. They pulled my mother, my grandmother, my aunt, and my grandfather out. Yeah, and he went and served in the American Armed Forces for 8 years. After his service, he landed finally in the American dream in Homestead, Florida. Now, that time period, Homestead, Florida had nothing but Patrick Air Force Base. So there was no employment. So his American dream was limited to how far he could walk. But there's somebody who believed in my grandfather, got him into an older vehicle, which allowed him to extend his reach by 50 to 100 miles, finding better employment, making more money, changing the trajectory of his life, my mother's life, and ultimately my life. And that person who believed in my grandfather was a used car salesman. And so now that's an example of starting with a frame before I tell you the answer. And so If I were just to say used car salesman, sleazy, dirt, you know, whatever thoughts come up. But if I start with a story, now all of a sudden that creates a frame around this individual. And I might even say, yeah, and you know, he's actually coming in next. You want to meet him? You'd be like, yeah, that sounds like a great guy because I claimed the frame. And so that's step one, is claim the frame. And if you're negotiating, by the way, it's a frame battle. The value of the money you have versus the value of the opportunity that I have in front of you. And if I can create a frame and you buy into my frame that there's massive opportunity and value, you will exchange your pile of money for my opportunity. And that's what sales is. That's what presentation is all about. Mm-hmm. And so we have to understand that piece of it. That's framing. And framing sometimes is one, you know, people say, wait, is it always stories? No, sometimes a frame is one word. If you were to say, hey, Renee, can you come to the party? And I just answer with no frame. I say, no. And now your brain's like, God, what a jerk. But if I were to add one word and a little tone, you say, Renee, can you come to the party? I say, yeah, unfortunately, no. Now, all of a sudden, I've controlled the meaning. I've made sure that you understood so many of the things that were unspoken there that I wanted to, but unfortunately, I can't. And so,
that's why text messages can fall flat and you got to be careful.
Oh, absolutely. And people say there's no tone in text. Yeah, there is. Whatever tone the listener is in.
So you got to create bad the tone. Mood. You have to create the tone. And that's why I'm always using emojis. Like, I'm the most annoying person because I'm always giving the thumbs up because I'm very short. But you're always getting a thumbs up from me, regardless of what it is, even if I hate you.
You know, it's funny. And this is a great example. I come from a certain group of people in my life that thumbs up was sarcastic. Whatever, pal. And so, I'm putting my meaning now in a thumbs up of like, you know,
sounds,
like I don't have
like those like ruthless 90s chicks. You got a lot of rejection from them, I feel like, back in the day.
They were ruthless, man.
Yeah. The devil wears Prada with a thumbs up to a middle finger, right?
I love it. It's worse than the middle finger. It's patronizing. No, so then the frame, and so then, of course, in communication, we want to deliver a message. And so the purpose of the frame is to deliver a message. It's like a Trojan horse. What was the purpose of a Trojan horse? Well, we wanted to kill you, but meaning that was my message, was destruction. But I couldn't get in because your forces, there was too many reinforcements. The castle walls didn't allow me in. The defenses were up. So the first step in getting my message to you was I get to bring down the offenses, the defenses. And so how? I framed it as a gift. And all of a sudden, like, wow, that was really nice. This Trojan horse comes in, and of course the gates come down and the message goes in. Now, that's a negative spin, but that's the same process. Well, why not use, if you try to communicate something very positive to somebody, they weren't listening. Like, hey, you need to stop doing drugs and alcohol. You need to eat better. You need to reduce your stress. You need to stop smoking. You need to get out of bed and start working harder. Whatever it is, get in the gym. But their defenses are so high. So we need that positive Trojan horse to be able to do that. And that's what framing does. It tills the soil before you plant the seed of the idea. And so the best example I give people is like, okay, if I need to get a message from me to you, and there's a moat or a river, body of water between us, the frame is the boat. And if I put a message in that boat, I can carry it across to you and you'll get it. If I don't have a boat, I can't get the message to you. Now, this is also an interesting piece.
Can you give me a good frame on why I need to work out? Can you hit me with that right now? Because I'm a little resistant to it.
Are you serious?
No. But I'm just curious what it would look like in practice.
Well, I mean,
that's okay, because I'm just like, I'm having fun, but I got to see it, right?
Yeah, I mean, making it.
Sorry
up
to put you on the spot, but
no, I'm happy to be on the spot. But I also, if you notice, I need to frame this up a little bit.
Yeah,
and so like to me, I think it's what, and that goes back to the tie down, what it means to you, and if I don't know you well enough. I'm
You're
taking
not
a shot.
Be as influential. You got to do your research. Yeah.
Yeah. I got to know you. Now I might say like, you know, do you feel like you need to, and you said no. So then I'm like, it's not authentic, but I get what you're saying. Let's come back to that. I can probably tell you why I did it for me.
Sure.
And sometimes we have to lead by example. So for me, I have been doing this for 30 years. I was a former athlete in college. I let my health go. I was always good at what I did, but I looked in the mirror and I was like, man, I'm 307 pounds, 45% body fat,
hard to come back from that.
Man, the same body fat percentage as bacon, as my friends would like to remind me. And I looked at that and I was like, man, would I even listen to me? Would I even listen to me? There's a picture of it if you do show
pull it. Pull it back.
Yep.
That's not you.
That's me.
That's
same
Chris
exact.
Christie.
Yeah, I know. That's the same exact angle, by the way. I took that same picture on the other side. And I looked at that and I said, okay, if I can't even hold myself accountable to these basic disciplines of self-awareness, of self-control, how is anyone going to listen to me? So for me, it was integrity. That was the driving factor. I was out of integrity and I was full of shit. And so, horrible.
Dude,
I was carrying my bag up the stairs, a 72-pound bag from traveling. I'm 6'3", I'm 245 pounds, 44 pounds this morning. And I was carrying it up the stairs, and it was 72 pounds, and I was like, this is brutally heavy, big Tumi bag. And it dawned on me when I got to the top, I'm like, because I've lost 102 pounds of fat.
Congratulations, man. That's fucking awesome.
Thank you. I grabbed my wife. I said, hey, honey, pick this bag up. And she's like, what the hell is in this? I'm like, I lost 30 more pounds than this. I was carrying this plus 30 pounds up the stairs every time. And she's like, holy wow.
That's when it hits you. Yeah.
Yeah, it really hit. And so I did it for me. Now, I used how many frames just now did I just use? One, carrying a bag. I used a picture of me before. That's a powerful framing device. Luggage, you know, bacon. There's another framing device, right? There was so much framing going on right there. And so to me, so that's the frame. The message was, I realized that my diet and my health was much more than just, it was just more than just diet and exercise. It was around who I was and my integrity. It was also about longevity. My wife is younger than I am. I don't want to be sitting and having the conversation. It's like, babe, yeah, I'd be on this earth longer, but I decided to eat and be lazy.
Now you're
and
really
that reality.
Erickson, man. You're really twisting that one, right? Holy crap. Yeah.
Yeah. And I was like, well, I don't want that conversation. And so to me, that's what it was. And so you look at the difference between someone who's a really good storyteller and someone who loves to tell stories. There's a big difference.
Yes.
Both tell stories, but for some reason we like the other. Well, okay. So then you realize it has nothing to do with the story. See, someone who's a really good storyteller tells you a story and they use the story to deliver a message of value and importance. The person who loves to tell stories, they use our time just to tell us a story. Mm-hmm. It's like saying, I'm sending you a boat and there's no value in that boat. There's no message. And you go, well, why the frick did I wait for this boat? But if I say, hey, wait, I'm sending a boat across and there's a value there, a pot of gold, an idea, advice, a lesson, you go, hey, thank you. And it took time to wait for that boat, but it was so worth it. But if you made me sit there and wait for this boat, this story, and at the end there was nothing, then it was about you. You just wanted to talk and you used my time just to tell me a story. And that's the big difference. So now, storytelling opens the audience up so we can get a little message, but now influence happens on the third step, which is the tie down. And this is the hardest part for people to get. The tie down answers the question, what this means to you is. The reason I share that with you is this. And that can come from many different angles. If I have an influence objective that I want you to act in a certain way, I need to somehow align my objective with what's important to you. And if I can align those two, and I'd say, well, for a second, Jake, is health important to you? I mean, you look like you're in shape.
I'm in shape, baby.
I mean, seriously, you look like you're in shape.
No, I'm in shape. Yeah.
Good. And so for me, I would say to you, Jake, it's not about getting in shape, but I would challenge you to say, here's why I share my story. If you found a way to stay in shape at our age, and not saying you're old,
41,
then I think you have an obligation to then share your secrets with other people. Because one, I think it'll keep you sharp, right? Keep you on track. But two, think of all the people that you're going to affect when you do that. So now maybe I wanted to, you know, if I look at somebody who's got it figured out, then I want to challenge you to say, well, help us figure that out. What can you do to help us? Because clearly you've solved a puzzle that most people currently can't solve.
And that's the basis for our multifamily education.
Yeah.
There you go.
Gang,
there you go.
Let's take a quick time out to hear from our sponsor. And remember, don't be a storytelling leech. All right. We'll be right back.
Now, we have had a great run in multifamily, going from 0 units to over $250 million in assets. That's over 2,000 apartment deals that we've been able to purchase through our framework, Buy Right, Manage Right, and Finance Right.
Now, Jake and I, we created the Jake and Gino Community back in 2015. We launched our first book, Wield Our Profits. And since then, our students have closed over 60,000 units. That's over $4 billion in assets they've been able to close over the last 6 years.
And that's why this community has been so successful. We call it results-based education, and we pour back into the community everything that we've learned on our journey from 0 to 2,000 units and all our systems and scale that we use on our very own property management and investing companies.
Jake, I love that. It's not just education, it's implementation. So what I want you to do, click on that link down below, apply to work with our team, see how we can help you on your journey multifamily.
All right, we are back, and I love the story about your grandfather, so I have to ask, are you gonna follow in his shoes? Are you gonna escape from tyranny in Minnesota to the sunny shores of Florida? That's a joke somewhat, but I'd love to hear your answer.
I'm trying to escape the tyranny of Minnesota. I would love to go to Florida, but we're probably looking at Arizona because it's a little more central for the travel.
Fair.
I get palm trees. I don't get the water that I want, but at least I'm close to it in Mexico, so we can get there.
Very cool. Very cool. Someone wants to be more influential. They have a good product. And again, going back to the multifamily piece, they may be raising money for their deals, doing syndications, etc. But they're just flat. They don't tell good stories. They're not influential. Everyone needs to start somewhere.
Yep.
Give me maybe the first step or two just to get on the right track, because this stuff doesn't happen overnight. It's hours upon hours of practice and preparation and hard work. So give us the starting point for someone in that position.
Here's the thing. If you are in multifamily sales, that means that you had an aha at some point that this is a good thing. And I've got some good friends that do this. And I'll make sure, let me introduce you to Anthony Vecino, by the way, if you don't know him. He wrote the book.
Anthony's
a book
part of our community.
Oh, dude's a great guy. Yeah, I love him. And so I got a chance to talk to him a lot. And anybody who's in that world, had an aha moment for something that says this is there. And for some reason, they were predisposed to seeing it. And so one of the things that we look at is the things that we do now come from an earlier part of our childhood. And the best way for me to do that is to do that with you guys. If you guys, can I give you an example? And everything I'm about to do with you guys, these people can do for them. This is, by the way, this is the first step in the Amplify process when you come through our course. So who do you want to be my guinea pig here?
I'll let Jake do it.
No, Gino. Gino's up. I've been talking too much. It's Gino.
Okay, Gino. Gino?
Yeah. All right, Gino. So Gino, here's the thing. I'm gonna set you up to fail. Okay, so I'm going to ask you three questions, and
it's not a hard thing to do, bro.
You're lowering the bar, my man. You're lowering the bar, but so I'm just going to set you up to fail, but that's okay. Gino, who are you? What do you do? What makes you unique?
I am a father of six children, homeschooled. I am a multifamily investor, educator, father, and mentor.
Got it. And what makes you unique?
That's a tough question. What makes me unique? I can deal with Jake.
All right. So humor. All right. So now let's take a look at this. If you were to rank your influence on a scale of 1 or 0, 1, you're moving towards becoming more influential. 0, you moved away from it. What would you rank that, 1 or 0?
I would say I'm more of a 1.
So we're 1. And Jake, what would you say?
About Gino or myself?
Just in that answer.
No, I'm sorry. Am I ranking Gino or myself? I'm sorry.
Gino's answer.
Yes, I agree. 1.
Okay. So Gino, let's be honest. Do you think anybody heard that and go, holy shit, I need to make sure I'm around that guy?
No, you're right. They would
so
not.
Was it 1 or 0?
I even paused with the 0 when you asked me 1 or 0. I had to think about that for a second. So
I'm
I agree
with attention.
You.
It's a 0. Fat 0. And here's why. It was what everybody else says. And you fell into a trap, what we call the question trap. Question trap consists of 3 things. The first thing is that most people don't put much thought into the questions that they asked. Who are you? What do you do? What makes you unique? Okay. Sounds pretty cliched, pretty typical. Second, for some reason, we feel compelled to answer questions that are asked of us, even if they're horrible questions. Third, the person asking the question is leading. Now, we put all those together. I feel compelled to let somebody lead me down a path that they didn't put much thought into. That's what happened. So I led you down a path to fail. And so first step in influence in being doing this is that we have to lead our own path. We have to be the ones in that are deciding the direction of the communication and the direction that we're headed. And part of that is understanding this. And so I'm going to take you on a different route to be able to answer those questions to show you what a 1, maybe even a 10 sounds like. So Gino, give me 3 words that make you unique. Don't overthink them. First 3 that come to mind.
Responsibility, hardworking, committed.
So you're a responsible person, you're hardworking, and you're committed. Would you say that being responsible, being hardworking, and being committed also fit your values?
100%. They are 100%. My values.
Look at how cool that was. If you ever do values exercises, some people take weeks, if not months, to try to figure out their values. I did it in 10 seconds. Why? I asked you an outcome question. And typically, our values are important to us, and we try to live them through our uniqueness. So now, here's what's really cool. If those are your values, hard work, responsibility, and hard work, responsibility, and
committed.
And being committed. I'm going to write those down so I don't forget them again. And we know those are your values. Research says that our values are formulated between the ages of 9 and 13. So the logical question is hard work, committed, and responsible. I'm going to just write these down. The question is, okay, so since it wasn't just recently, you were a lazy guy and I just at least recently decided to be hardworking. You've been hardworking your whole life. You've been committed your whole life. You've been responsible your whole life. It doesn't mean you didn't have moments of weakness, but those were values that were there. So the question is, between the ages of 9 and 13, who was around and what happened?
Gino was now in the back of the restaurant with his dad, and that's where that shit came from. Sorry.
I love it. Well, that'll trigger one of 2 types of stories. It'll trigger either what we call a lighthouse story, right? Where somebody was like, well, pick one of these, hard work, committed, or being responsible. Which one's on your heart the most right now?
It's with my father, you know, working at the restaurant, being a hard worker.
So hard work. Okay. So your dad it'll trigger a story, either what we call a lighthouse story, somebody who was a pinnacle, a beacon of light for hard work, and they showed you the way and you wanted to be like them. Or what a lot of us have is what we call a foghorn story, somebody who was the opposite. They were lazy and they showed us who we didn't want to be. And so because they were lazy, we had darkness in that area of our life. And for some crazy reason, we decided to become the lighthouse in our life as we got older. And so it sounds like your dad was a lighthouse for hard work. Is that correct?
Yes.
So now watch what happens. I want you to tell me a story about your dad between the ages of 9 and 13 and how he was a lighthouse for hard work.
I can say that for 20 years of his life, he was sick, had an ulcer, never missed a day, never complained about it, just showed up and provided for the family and had to deal with shithead partners. Bottom line, never heard him complain. And
love that. So that's a general analysis of him, right? So that's what mm-hmm. we call a bullet point of him, several bullet points of him. Now, powerful, you can hear it in your voice, but not influential yet. I want you to tell a story about a time, a specific time. I remember this one time.
Tell about how the partners used to treat you and how you used to go through it and just your time at the restaurant, Gino. I've heard this before.
But I want it 9 to 13.
Yeah. So from 9 to 13, gosh.
I remember this one time.
I just remember this one time going, and I'm 10 years old and walking into the restaurant, and I remember seeing the loaves of bread there. We're the first ones that show up. We get the loaves of bread. We bring them into the kitchen. We start prepping the kitchen. And I remember that's the day when he started and he started teaching me how to cook. And I remember that. I remember being in the kitchen with him, holding a fillet knife and filleting chicken cutlets with him and sitting right next to him. And that's how I fell in love with working with him and starting a restaurant.
Love that. And you enjoyed getting up early and putting in the work. What was it about that? Was it about the quality? Was it about the attention to detail? What was it?
I think it was the accomplishment. I think it was actually working with him. I looked up to him as my father and as a role model. And he was really good at something and people admired him. And I think I may have gravitated towards that to say, wow, he's creating food for people and people really enjoy his cooking and they look up to him as Vito in the kitchen.
So would you say that you loved how he mentored and trained you?
Yes, I would, in certain aspects. Absolutely.
Would you say that a lot of what you do right now is mentoring and training people in the same way that your dad did to you?
You're a prick. You know that? Jedi mind shit. So yes, absolutely. I want to be there for my students. I'm in Italy on my vacation, taking phone calls at 9 o'clock at night, trying to help students do a refi. It's embedded in me. I can't get rid of it. My wife tells me to take a break. I can't take a break because I love doing this shit. So you got me, Renee.
Did you hear his voice too? The passion, mm-hmm. the intangible pieces that made it unquestionable of why you love this. And so if I were to ask you, who are you? What do you do? What makes you unique? And you were to then to choose your own pattern and say, I remember as a kid coming into the restaurant at 5 a.m. and the first thing that was there were these loaves of bread. Because my father got up early to make the loaves of bread because they knew that at a restaurant, the bread is what determines the quality and the experience. It's the first thing that you have. It's the first way to love on your customer. You don't even charge them for it. It's the first gift you give them. And I remember my father giving me a fillet knife and teaching me how to cut chicken cutlets and taking the time to show me that there's a technique behind this. It wasn't just about slicing. There was a certain size, a certain dimension, and a certain experience with every single slice and love that went into every cut and the attention to detail he put in there. And I enjoyed every single moment, not only just being there with my dad, but being there with him and learning this skill. And I didn't know what I wanted to do when I grew up, but all I knew is I wanted to make people feel the way that my father made me feel. He wanted to have that time with him and to learn a skill set to be the best that I could. And when I was introduced to multifamily homes and the process and how many people didn't have a mentorship in that area, and when I was turning, by the way, if I were to add in when you were first turned on to single family homes or multifamily homes, as the second part of that story, it takes it to a whole nother level. But let's say that we told that story. And so I knew that I wanted to train people and coach people in the same way that my father did. And that's why we created this community. But that's a one, if not a 10.
Wow.
And you, hey, wanted, Renee. You wanted to make dad proud too.
Hey, Renee, can I just,
that's the cherry on top.
Listen, yeah. I have to take this another step. And I know why Jake didn't do this, because Jake's an emotional, he's stunted when it comes to his emotions, and I get it because he doesn't want to share, but I want to make you share. When we get off this call, you're going to be doing that shit for me, bro. We're going to be doing one-on-one. But anyway, Renee, this is interesting. Something that really popped up, and I never fully understood why I hated the restaurant in 2008, but it's maybe because my father passed away in 2007. Mm. and he died. And
yeah,
I was in the kitchen all by myself. Maybe that's why I started hating it. I didn't want to be there anymore. And I can use the excuse of becoming financially free and wanting to make more money. And that's probably the stuff that's above. But the stuff that's below, that's why childhood, going back into your childhood, I've done a lot of this work, is so important, because you form a lot of those beliefs and a lot of those values. And having him there every day for 37 years and just enjoying working with him, and then he's not there anymore, that could really affect my the trajectory of my life. And for anybody listening to this, if you're going through something like that, making those decisions, understand why you're making those decisions. I made a great empowering decision to find another alternative, another vehicle. Thank God I did that. But maybe we make these decisions that are harmful. So I really want to thank you for shedding that light on me. I never really said that. Maybe I hated it because he wasn't there anymore. So thank you.
Well, thanks for being so transparent on that. And I mean, here's the other piece, the lesson of this is that isn't a single person here listening that doesn't feel a gift of what your vulnerability just gave us. And we are all the same way we become the protagonists in other people's stories. We just became that with you, which means it's inevitable that we connected deeper with you. Oxytocin was secreted. Our brains fired in the same way, and they mirrored each other. They started what's called neural coupling. All sorts of things happen. So it's a leadership lesson in there to be able to share that story. But more importantly, the life lesson of understanding the purpose by which we do things, and that there was a method to the madness. There was a reason behind it. I loved it for this. And when that went away, I didn't love it anymore because it was painful, but you found another outlet to continue his legacy in just a different way. The legacy continues strong. And in the passion, I mean, when I brought that up, you're like, I mean, your voice went up about, you know, three notches of volume, and you had instant stories to share about when you're in Italy. And, you know, your wife was doing it. It's such an undeniable, unshakable passion. And so the tie down, if you're listening to this, the reason I shared and did this whole process for you, if you're listening to this and you're dry, that means you're not adding any pathos, you're not sharing any story. But if you revisit why you do what you do, you can create the same exact experience that you felt by listening to Gino's story. And imagine if you were to tie that to a decision to work together. Now I trust you. I know where you're coming from. And if somebody else offered me a better deal, I don't know if I'd even listen, because I feel like I'm in something with you. And I know that you'd be there for me, which is more important, especially in a mentor relationship.
Wow. Tons of value, Renee. Really, really appreciate this. With that being said, what is the way that folks can reach out to you, get a hold of you and your team? Please share that information.
Yeah. Well, my website's meetrenee.com, and you can follow me on Instagram at Learn with Renee, LEARN with Renee, RENE. I do a video a day on there, all educational. We also have a monthly group coaching program that if you want, I'll give you a link for anybody listening to get a free month so they can get a chance to feel what it is. We feel pretty confident. They'll get two sessions out of that because it's twice a month. But yeah, Learn with Renee. And we do this Amplify course, which what I just did with Gino, we do that one time a month in a different city. And I'll take 10 people to go through a very intense process to really identify that story, but then tie it to the business. And so that's where the ROI comes, where you can take that story, become a great storyteller, get your body language in place, and get that origin story in place, and then tie it to the business value proposition. Now you become unstoppable.
I'm sold. And honestly, we need it because we have a phenomenal product, but we're, maybe hesitant to lean into the influence at times and need better training, I think, to be, fully transparent. So that was amazing. And I know Gino's a little emotional right now, but I'm going to volley back to you, Gino. You got to close us out here, man. We're not letting you off the hook.
Well, I got to share Renee's story from start to end. And I think the important aspect of it, that his grandfather came from Cuba. He served in the military for 8 years. So another sacrifice story. Renee was born in Miami. He moved to Minnesota when he was 8 years old. He never met his father from the book. His mother, she said at one point was a nun. And I love his story about going to college. His sophomore year, he got cut by basketball. And that was his identity. That was his life. And then he ended up becoming a salesman. And when he became a salesman, he saw the passion and his drive. He found his why. And at such a young age, to be lucky to be able to do that, then jumping into the neuroscience and finding that out and understanding how we move people and understanding what his gifts are in life. Writing the book, Amplify Your Influence, with the frame, the message, and the tie down. If you are in search of somebody who can help you with your origin story, because we all have it inside of us, if you want to be able to create impact in other people's lives, please don't hesitate. Reach out to Renee. Take the next step. We're not born with these skills. These skills are not inherent in us. We can learn all these skills. And this is a skill that if you do have a product and you do have a great value to offer to others, learn how to be able to offer it ethically, honestly, and the right way. Thanks, Renee.
Awesome. Well, thank you. I appreciate that, guys.
Excellent. Renee, really appreciate you. And gang, as always, we believe in buying deals for the long term. Think in decades. I'm Jake. He is the G-Daddy, and we make it happen. We'll see you next time.